Welcome back to the activation phase. Today is the first of a very special series. We are covering the Age of Vikings, the OG saga era.
We're back home, baby.
Yeah. All right. I'm JP, and I'm joined by my trusty co-host, Tim.
Hello.
All right. I think we should start off by saying this episode is not sponsored by Gripping Beast Dark Age Warriors.
This whole series is not sponsored by Gripping Beast Dark Age Warriors, but they will
if Gripping Beast wants to sponsor us,
let us know.
Yeah, let us know.
Sure.
All right. I think this one's going to be a special one because we're just going by the order of the book at the moment. So we're starting off with Anglo-Saxons. It's probably one of the more well-known and covered factions out there in terms of minis, general, just people being aware of it. Amount of films, series, books,
yes,
everything else. So I don't think there's like a lot of mystery here. And generally, I think the battle board manages to capture kind of the general vibe, at least
very well,
for the Hollywood Anglo-Saxons. Quite
Well. Do you mind? I think we're back in the Age of Vikings, and this is your hometown. Do you mind giving us a tiny history lesson on the Anglo-Saxons?
Sure. So we covered the Age of Invasions where they had Saxons. So
yeah,
these guys are basically the Saxons that conquered and settled England and then kind of calmed down a little bit, turned to Christianity, and started setting up some small kingdoms, and then proceeded to battling among themselves, really, and the surrounding people. So that's basically what it's down to. So it's a mixture of the Saxons and whatever local population they managed not to kill and assimilate. Basically, they're kind of before the Anglo-Danes turned up and Harold came over. So there's a little bit of an overlap here. This is a little bit earlier than the Anglo-Danes taking over, but generally kind of during the same period. So I don't know if
we truly are back. JP giving history lessons, it feels like home.
But anyway, I guess the most famous thing that they're kind of generally known for is having large levy armies, being able to recruit them from not just having people professional wars, but also having like a requirement to supply your own war gear. villages being required to actually equip kind of part-time soldiers as well. So that's generally what you'll see in this particular faction. Maybe in terms of modeling options, there are so many different models you can use. I think kind of the miniature world being largely a very Anglo-centric hobby. The Anglo-Saxons were covered extensively by every single metal miniature manufacturer extensively, and also lots of plastic options. And I think it's pretty easy to say that they're so generic also that if you make some Anglo-Saxons, you can probably slot them into multiple Age of Viking armies, at least for like warriors or levies or something like that. So they're very, very versatile.
All right. Do you wanna start off with their equipment options so we know which miniatures to buy?
Sure. So first of all, they use the green. I guess they're called the Germanic dice, but it's like the one with the Sutton Hoo helmet, the axe, and then the pony, and then the equipment options. I'm just going to ignore the special characters for now because the equipment options are actually very, very simple. So your warlord can be either on foot or on horse with no special equipment. Your hearthguard can either be on foot or on horses, again without any special equipment. Your warriors have no special equipment options and they're just on foot. And then your levies can either have bows or they have the melee option. So that means they're armor 4 against both shooting and a melee, and then only have aggression of half. So that's it. I mean, they get a little bit more complicated if you start throwing special characters, but I think we're just going to
just that don't. For now. Yeah, just don't. Yeah.
Like, never mind. So really, really simple equipment option.
All right. So let's go into the battle board, which is which doesn't have the standard stuff. So do you want to start us off with the top row as you always do?
Sure. So like you said, they don't have standard basic activations. So where the Hearthguard would normally be, you have the Select Ferd. So this is activate a hero, a unit of Hearthguard, or any unit of 10 or more figures. All right, interesting. Oh, this could give us a clue how this battle board would work, but I guess you'll just have to wait. So yes. The next one is the Great Ferd. So this is where the warriors would normally be, and this is also using just the common and then the rare. So activate a unit with at least 8 figures, and then finally the location of where the levy would normally be, where you need a rare and an uncommon, or an uncommon rather, is called just the Ferd. And here it's activate a unit of less than 8 figures. And then finally, your combat bonus is just the usual, and same thing with the activation pool. So here the hint really is that it depends on the unit size. So just to recap, you can activate a unit of 10 or more figures with all dice facings, a unit of at least 8 figures with a common or a rare, and then a unit below 8 figures, you need an uncommon or a rare. So let's head over to the advanced abilities.
Yeah, so the first advanced ability, Valiant Hearts, is an Ordis ability that can take any die facing, and it perfectly plays into this. It's just an enabler for the rest of your board. So until the start of your next turn, all your units count as being 2 figures larger, or 4 figures for Hearthguard, when determining the effects of saga abilities. If you use a rare, reroll the die and add it to your inactive saga dice. So you use this if you have if your units are slightly below, you know, the cap of 10 or whatever you need at that point. And this also really helps with all the other battle board abilities that kind of get better the bigger units are. And this is, to have this tool is, yeah, it's very good. It makes it possible for your opponent. They might reduce your unit down to 9 levies, but with this, they still benefit from all the 10 figure buffs. So this is great. I think if your units are low, that you play this a lot. And then in the beginning, when everything is super powerful, you don't play this. And so it's a great ability.
Yeah, it just lets you keep kind of in the fight a little bit longer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so the next one is Truce. This is either a uncommon or a rare. This is an orders or an orders reaction. So remove a fatigue from each of your units containing at least 10 figures. This is one of the most annoying abilities on this board if you're facing them, because it's just a... it's just such an amazing ability. You can either do it in your orders or orders reaction. So you can already kind of, as an Anglo-Saxon player, you can do all your melees, charge in, do lots of kind of do everything you want to do, and then play it in the orders reaction phase and basically make your melee levy back to being pretty much fresh and ready to go and ready just to close ranks and turtle up and do. And get no damage whatsoever. So it's a very frustrating one for your opponents, but incredibly good, incredibly efficient. There's just so many different ways you can play this.
Absolutely. Now with the new changes to the rules, even when you had a die on it at the beginning of your orders phase, you can play this and then put another die on it to play it at the beginning of the opponent's orders reaction, their orders phase or whatever. So keeping units fresh with this, very easy and definitely doable.
Yeah, so I completely forgot about the FAQ change, but that makes it even better. So
yes,
this is the Anglo-Saxons just became more annoying. So, all right,
yep,
good.
All right, next up is Defenders of the Kingdom. It's a melee ability that takes an uncommon. Gain 1 attack die and 1 defense die. If your unit contains at least 10 figures, gain 1 extra attack and 1 extra defense die. I think defense dice and attack dice are very nice, and four of them for an uncommon is also very nice. So having this, especially on like your melee levy, where the extra defense dice will just make it even more frustrating for your opponent to break you, is great. This is a very easy ability to use on this battleboard, but I think there might be other abilities that are better.
Yep, agreed. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just kind of like the internal balance of the board makes some of the ones that we're going to get to so much better.
Absolutely.
All right, so the next one is Close Ranks. This is only using a common. So this is a melee ability. If your unit has more figures than the enemy unit, gain 3 attack dice, or 5 attack dice if your unit has at least twice as many figures as the enemy unit. So this is surprisingly easy to play. If you do play the Anglo-Saxons. We didn't talk about the kind of like how people tend to play them. So using 6 points of levy is not uncommon.
It's definitely not uncommon. It's perfectly fine. Like,
it's very solid.
We just assume that for now. Yeah.
I think we're going to get into some of the more esoteric builds at the end of this, but for now, just assume that you're taking a lot of different levy. It doesn't even really matter if you're taking levy with bows or melee levy, to be honest. But anyway, closing ranks or close ranks. Just remember, your levy with melee equipment only have half the attack dice. So here, this is a really, really easy way with common dice to increase that a lot. To basically make them like warriors.
Yeah. All right. Next up is Unison. It's an activation that takes a uncommon. Activate any unit for a movement which does not generate fatigue. You may activate 2 units if both of them contain at least 10 figures. This is, again, I think this is, sometimes I forget how good these abilities are. I think an uncommon for two moves with no fatigue is just juicy. It definitely helps the foot army to kind of keep up with their opponent. And I think this is a great ability.
Yeah, this is, you really get caught off guard by how quick a foot army is. I think what you expect when you see a bunch of levy on the table is like, oh, they're going to spend a lot of dice activating and everything like that. But if they're, the units are still fresh and above 10 models, yeah, these guys move fast. They get in your face really, really quickly. So yep. Just beware. And if you are an Anglo-Saxon player, I think they pretty much play this every single time that they can when it's relevant. Like, it's just such a good... Such a good ability. I mean, one thing
even just 2 activations for an uncommon is fine most of the time. Like,
yeah, definitely. Then also, the only thing that you can't do is charge, but if you just want to move up the board and position yourself, it's perfectly adequate.
Yep.
All right. So the next one is No Surrender. Here you need a rare. This is an orders reaction. So during the enemy activation phase, all the enemy units which declare a charge against one of your units in open terrain and at least 10 figures strong suffer a fatigue at the end of the charge, but before the melee has resolved. This is insanely good. This also makes the shooty Anglo-Saxon variant of the warband incredibly resilient and annoying to play against because you're going to want to move up. It doesn't really matter if you're not hiding in a field. You could put them somewhere out in the open and then still get like a pretty decent, you can buff your armor up to something normal. So I think this one, especially if you're taking lots of bow-armed levy, is... incredibly good. And even if you're not, it just makes your melee levy fight even better, or they can just bump their armor up with that fatigue. So this one's incredible. The only thing is it is a rare, so you do need to roll that at the adequate time.
Yeah, and I think I think the rare, we'll go into that, the rare is like super crucial for the melee build of the of these guys. So if you want to prepare for everything, for all the possibilities, for all the opponents to come, you should probably paint like 4 points of levies with bows and 4 points of levies without bows, and then decide if you want to go down the no surrender route. So this one where you shoot a lot and then when they charge you, it doesn't matter. And or if you want to go down the melee route and do call to arms, which is an ability that comes up in a second here, which is super good for all the melee builds, I think. Yeah. All right. Next up is Crash of Shields. It's a melee ability that takes two commons. Your opponent must discard attack dice equal to half the number of figures in your unit. And yeah, it just, if you know you have a 12 stack of levies doing this, and then maybe you even played Valiant Hearts, so your units count as being 14, your opponent usually discards like 6 or 7 attack dice, which is super frustrating. And yeah, it's really good. I not much more to say. It's two commons, which is very expensive, of course. But also your opponent, like in a normal point in Saga, generates 8 attack dice. So them not having a chance to attack you back is kind of annoying. So I think sometimes it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, this is just so frustrating if you charge in with units with like a Hearthguard or something, where you're counting on just having quality attacks going in, and then you can't even roll those dice. You just thanks for turning up. You're gonna get
what's cool though. What's cool, guys? Yeah, it was nice.
It's nice. You're gonna get a fatigue. Thanks. So very frustrating, but yes, two dice is a little bit expensive, but just so incredibly good at the right time.
Yes.
Okay, the next one is Overlapping Shields. So this is an uncommon. So this is a melee or shooting reaction. So gain 2 defense dice. If your unit contains at least 10 figures, you also gain 2 attack dice. So for common, getting 2 defense dice against shooting is already really, really legit. First of all, it's incredibly frustrating shooting levy to begin with. And melee
it's
levy
never good.
Even yeah. worse. So yes. If they get extra defense dice, it's just so demoralizing. You're spending your quality attack dice on rabble, and then they're just getting extra defense dice as well. In terms of in the melee as well, like there's just nothing wrong with it either. It's just so much better than the combat bonus. I'm not sure why you would ever put something on combat bonus.
Yeah, this is kind of like Defenders of the Kingdom, right? For a common, you gain 2 defense dice and 2 attack dice. And so, and Defenders of the Kingdom gives you, for an uncommon, gives you 2 defense dice and 2 attack dice, assuming your unit is bigger than, has at least 10 figures. But yeah.
Yeah, you probably would if you're bumping it up with Valiant Hearts anyway. So
yeah,
you're going to be getting those dice.
All right, next up is the enabler of the board for the melee levies. It's Call to Arms. It's an Aura's ability that takes a rare. Until the end of the turn, your levies have the aggression of warriors during melees. So levies have, the profile is 4-4 for their armor, and then the aggression is half. And so once you play this, just your turn, but once you play this, they're basically warriors. Like, they have armor 4-4, they have aggression 1, and so you'll big 12 stacks of levies. They will throw 12 dice, and then they're still huge to play the other abilities with, but sometimes you kind of rely on rolling this rare, and that can make it difficult if you need it, if you really need it and you don't get it. Then sometimes your levies can feel like they don't really bring that punch, and that can be difficult for sure.
Yeah, this makes it very scary, especially if you're kind of positioning yourself to do multiple charges or something like that. One thing, it does only count during your turn, so not overlap to the enemy's turn. So that's one thing to watch out for. But yeah, this rare is crucial. So maybe if you roll rare in a previous turn, maybe just hold it back.
Just put it here.
Just put it here. Just wait for the opportune moment, because there's nothing worse than having everything lined up and then just having to charge in with your half aggression levy and not doing much. So yes.
And the there's an actual decision to be made, right? If you want to do call to arms and be aggressive with your attacks, or do no surrender with also, which also takes the right, which gives the fatigue to units that charge your units in open ground. I think that's like a different, whole different archetype of army that you kind of like either one. And I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So the last one is a nice one. It's called Bretwalda. It's a common plus an uncommon. This is the orders ability. So until the beginning of your next turn, your warlord counts as being a unit of 10 figures and increases his armor by one. All right. So that's pretty insane. If you just read back on some of the other abilities, I think he's already got resilient. Presence of four. That doesn't actually matter because he just counts as 10. So
yes,
the no surrender works. So if someone decides to charge him, because it still counts as being active until the end of to the beginning of your next turn. So people get a fatigue if they so choose to charge him. It means he can trigger basically all the good extra buffs from the abilities. So
and also truce. So if you play this in your order's phase and then immediately play truce, and he will just lose a fatigue, and then he can do lots of stuff. And then if you have truce lined up again, he will just do so, remove the fatigue again at the beginning of your opponent's turn. And so your wall can be a real murder machine into basically everything. So that's kind of scary.
Yeah, that's pretty nasty. The only thing is, like, you're probably not going to have a ton of Hearthguard lying around. So if you do probably have like an unlucky melee, then yeah, it's game over for your warlord. But he does have, you can make some pretty tactical decisions in who to charge, which means he'll probably survive. So it's a pretty nasty one. It's also like thematically really cool if you have a beatstick warlord. So especially among like the rabble. So I think it's just a really cool ability to throw up. However, I haven't, in my battles against Anglo-Saxons, I haven't actually seen people use this very often.
I have used this, but sometimes the two dice to do it feel too expensive, I think, because there's a bunch of good abilities on here, and all the abilities basically are very restrictive. They can usually only take one die or take two, and it's very like there's not a lot of options. Only truce and overlapping shields basically, or valiant hearts offers you the choice between the dice, and truce is no real choice if you want to put a rare or an uncommon. And so putting these two specific dice, common and uncommon, into this ability, just in 4 out of 5 turns you can't afford it, I think.
Definitely.
So yeah.
Yeah, so it's a shame, but I think it makes him a beat stick if
you can make him a beat stick. And if you build for it, that's cool.
Yeah. Should we talk about building for it now?
Let's talk about building for it, yeah.
All right. This section is sponsored by Gripping Beast, Dark Age Warriors. All right. Let's
go on. You wish. You wish. I mean, yeah, so before we go into model kits, I think the different versions of the army you can build is basically either 4 points of levies with bows and 2 points of levies without bows, or 4 points of levies, or like 5 points of levies without bows and 1 point of levy with bows. Just some kind of combination there. Or, of course, you can put in mercenaries that work really well with this. That would be, for example, the fanatical pilgrims. Yeah. They love this board because the abilities are good and they activate very, very easily because of the cheap activations on top. And also, if you play Call to Arms, they will also have the aggression of warriors. And the other one that's kind of popular with them is the...
is it the Gilgit?
Norse Gales? Yeah, the Galgadil. Yeah, those ones because... Yeah. You can play Valiant Hearts to make them count as being 10 units, and then Truce works on them. And of course, No Surrender will work on them. And so even when your opponent starts charging them, that's going to be hella annoying because your opponent will always take fatigue charging them. So
also, they don't take a dice to activate as well. So that makes it even better in combination with this board.
Absolutely. Very self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think maybe some of the more special builds throw in some Hearthguard, which might be surprising. I think the less thematic or the one that people find a little bit strange to see, based on kind of like the historic way of fighting, is taking like mounted Hearthguard, a unit of 8. That way, with Valiant Hearts, they can enjoy really, really good buffs as well. So they'll count as being
absolutely
10 plus. It also means that you can move like crazy without fatigue using Unison and enjoying that fatigue-free move. That means they can just literally get across the board, be in a position where you really don't expect them to be. And then finally, just generally being unit of 8 Hearthguard, super mobile. Also, you can get rid of fatigue really quickly with the truce, and everything else is pretty crazy. So I think there it's like a surprising choice, but works out really well with this warband.
It does. And getting defense dice through overlapping shields and defenders of the kingdom is just defense dice on foot Hearthguard, especially, or also on horse Hearthguard, of course, are super valuable because keeping just one of those guys alive can make the difference whether they work as a 10 figure unit later. So yeah, I think their abilities, once you can make them count as 10, they are real beat sticks. They're kind of what the world is supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm also wondering if you do your warlord mounted, use Brett Walda. He's also getting his armor increased by 1 against shooting, so he becomes a 5.
Yeah, he does.
That becomes pretty nasty. So yeah, I'm starting to think about how I can build this.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing Hans, and I faced a warlord on his horse without Hearthguard, and he died turn 1, of course, because they without Hearthguard, horse warlords, I think, are very, very easy to kill if you have some shooting. And so that's maybe not the best choice to have your... I've seen that done by many generals, by many players, to just have your warlord alone on a horse, and I think that's always very scary. But yeah, if you can accompany him by some Hearthguard, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I think also in terms of not wanting to paint like 72 levy,
that's weak.
Throwing in some Hearthguard, mounted Hearthguard, also helps you out on that front a little bit. So it's something to maybe paint up and then kind of have there in your pocket, and also then you can use it for a bunch of other warbands. So
yes.
Super valuable. How do you feel about facing Anglo-Saxons generally?
I it really depends on the warband you're facing them with, right? If you have lots of attack dice at your disposal, so that would be like, I don't know, many factions, but especially like Norse Gaels, Huns, Vikings, something that can crush levies. These guys aren't really a threat, but if you rely on high quality or auto hits, also Norse Gaels, but also some other factions, then these guys are super, super scary to play into, because all your auto hits that you make, or your plus ones to your attack dice, they don't really count into levies. They don't really matter, because you're still not going to kill like your whole unit of levies in one turn. So I think they're scary in the right matchup and not so scary in other matchups.
Yeah, so I think last time I played them was with possibly Welsh or something. And they're like, you're throwing some javelins, you're hoping to chip away, but throwing javelins at levy with like the melee option
sucks.
Not great. It just, yeah, you can chip away, but at the end of the game, yeah, there's still a lot left. So it's not great. And then if you do decide to charge, they can do the no surrender or anything like that. And they're also incredibly quick, so they can box you in, especially with the large units. So it becomes, they're just all around really tough. Since you have that many bodies, if you have like a turn where you roll badly on your defense dice, like, it doesn't really matter in the end. Like,
it doesn't. Like, yeah, it
kind of averages out, because you've got so many bodies, you can kind of just keep on going. So I think one thing to look out for is, or if you're playing against Anglo-Saxons, is just chip away and get them under that threshold. It just makes it, it takes, means that they either have to play Valiant Hearts. That means they can't play something else. They lose a dice. Or if they somehow don't use Valiant Hearts and they're far below the threshold for a number of units, they just lose so many buffs and then you can really start taking
them apart.
Which is easier said than done, to be honest. But that's kind of the way you have to do it. You just have to focus on a unit, get them low, and then chip away at their saga dice.
And also, if they are still a foot army, so if they deploy like on the whole battle board, you can, and you're mounted, you can just focus on one side. And of course, they're quite fast with units, but definitely more than half their army will take longer than one or two turns to get to you. So it's if you play it right, you can definitely kind of outmaneuver them because they are still fully on foot usually.
Well, it's also, once you have that many levy on the board, you do start kind of bumping into each other and blocking yourself and making it difficult to move around things. So that can either be kind of you're getting in your way. Probably the first time you play with that many models on the board, you will. But also use it as a strength. For example, against the Welsh, you can just box in the Welsh. That way they can't run away. They can't use their activation reactions as much. Or even if they do, they don't get far away from you enough where you can't get them with unison, for example. There's definitely some downsides, but they can also turn it around and make it really powerful.
Yeah, and also if the meta, like if the armies people take tend more towards shooting armies, then these guys are a menace to these armies because, as you said, shooting melee or javelin levy is literally the worst target in the standard game, and so being kind of fast with unison as well is just very good to go into these Irish. Timo, this is for you to go into these Irish and fuck them up. I think this is
definitely.
They're not bad at that.
Yeah, so I think just to recap, they've got lots of bodies. They can get rid of fatigue.
They do
incredibly well using truce and also just some fatigue-free moves. They're relatively potent in melee as well, but where they excel is just taking away dice from their opponent. So I think they survive for a long time. One area where they do somewhat suffer is just conquest points.
Yeah.
And although on the, I'm just trying to think, for example, if you're attacking baggages or stuff like that, you can't use advanced abilities. So you might be suffering a little bit there.
If you have call to arms, you still throw 12 dice. Yeah, so that should be fine.
Yeah. So I guess there you have to use your call to arms though. But I think those might be kind of like a little bit tougher as well. But overall, I think they're a solid all-round faction if you don't mind painting lots of guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and you make a very good point, but I think it's kind of a cold take by these days that conquest points just suck ass. Like, Hearthguard are impossible to do with conquest points. Conquer points, whatever, and levies are also impossible to play with that. So you can only do warriors, and I think that doesn't make the game better. So
no,
yeah, maybe it is a hot take.
Yeah. No, I think also warriors for this board, you can definitely take them, but I think you lose out on just having the massive bodies, and then just the nice call to arms, which basically buffs them incredibly high, incredibly well. So.
If you do warriors, you should kind of try to balance it out and do no levies, because I think then the call to arms is the no surrender one is going to be super good once you get charged, and the call to arms is going to be super annoying. So yeah.
All right.
Do you want to go into model options, just to which kits to buy exactly? I'll just go out there and say just the Victrix kits, Saxons, Anglo-Saxons. And then also like the Huskarls. I'm not sure if they're perfect, but I would definitely buy them. I think they're also for the the Anglo-Danes more or less, but to me they all look the same. I would buy these guys or the Dark Age Warriors, and then there's the Gripping Beasts, like the Huskarls one as well. So yeah, it's pretty cheap if you want to do plastic.
Yeah, I think plastic, two boxes of Gripping Beast Dark Age Warriors will set you up, and then maybe throw in like one of the boxes or one of the little blister packs of the plastic bow guys. Mm-hmm. And then you've literally sorted yourself out with probably 12 points of of levy, if you don't mind painting all of that.
For like multiple factions.
Yeah, multiple factions. This is literally what I've done. I painted up a box and a half of Gripping Beast Dark Age Warriors. And then I literally just slot them into, I'm playing Lombards. I guess I'm going to take melee levy guys. I'm using for the Franks. I'm using them for the Goths. And then basically you just switch out the Warlord because they're so generic. One thing that we also got is Wargames Atlantic provided us with a box of the Goth Warriors.
Yeah.
And the set is pretty much on the same generic level as the Dark Age Warriors from Gripping Beast. The quality is about the same. The size is about the same. The only difference a little bit is that they have some Goth helmets and stuff like that. But in terms of poses and everything else, they fit in really well. I would say that the quality is also slightly better. I mean, they are...
Yes, I mean, they're like I would 10, agree.
They're made like a decade later. I think they were made last year. So there's obviously like technological increases, like, you know, it's just better kit overall, but they're not too dissimilar. And I think they fit in really, really well with each other in terms of size and also kind of being able to switch between different weapon options as well. The only downside there is like the shields don't quite fit, but I think if you've been playing Saga for long enough, you have a large stash of round shields. Just kicking about. Or I'm pretty sure one of your gaming group buddies will not mind giving you some just plain round shields to use.
For like anyone with a Victrix bag of Vikings or whatever has enough shields to cover you.
Yeah, you're good. And also they fit the Victrix heads really nicely. So you can add in even
more. It looks really good.
So I think that's also a very sensible option, especially because many of the Victrix options, while they look really nice, they have a lot of armor. And personally, I'm not a fan of having levy, which is armored, because it just doesn't make sense.
I mean, either. Like, doesn't look like good.
The chainmail was very, very expensive. And you're not going to have some random peasant running around with chainmail.
Yeah.
And also, it makes it very difficult to distinguish between Hearthguard and levy. So that's my personal preference. I'm going to stick to it. And I think there's so many options in plastic, like you said. If you want to go fully Victrix, the Archer, Dark Age Archers and Slingers is also an option. The bodies that they use are very, very easy just to stick on arms with spears and arms with shields. From, for example, the Anglo-Dane box. So,
and that looks incredible. You've done a video on that on the YouTube channel, and these guys, they look way better than Gripping Beast, and better than Wargames Atlantic. But it's also more work to paint, right? Because that's just more detail.
Yeah, there's definitely significantly more detail. So you're spending a lot more time cleaning up the molds, mold lines, and it just requires more effort to get to look nice without looking messy. But
yeah,
they are just the quality of the sculpts are a lot higher. But they're a little bit of work, and then there you can also get loads of unarmored bodies on the table really quickly, especially if you buy one of the the Anglo-Danes, or maybe even, well, I'm not sure if the Vikings might be pushing a little bit. But those options are just really, really legit. And then it's also a relatively cheap option.
Yeah.
All right. What we do for the mounted Hearthguard, though, that's at the moment, I think there we're probably missing a little bit.
Yeah.
I believe, actually, the Norman Knights might be an option.
With some kit bashing.
With some kit bashing from Victrix. Like some of the, if you want to get really nitpicky, like their hauberks are kind of like too long and stuff like that. But yeah, okay.
Kind of their typical Norman heads as well, and the shields, of course. And
yeah, those are pretty easy to swap out with like the Anglo-Dane helmets.
The heads are a hassle because they aren't the normal heads like every other Victrix kit has, right? Because they have these weird slot-on heads. But if you want to make it work, you can definitely
make it work with a little bit of X-Acto knife and some green stuff, or if you're super precise, you can just kind of hide all the seam lines with plastic cement. So that's one option. I believe Victrix is also coming out with their unarmored Norman guys.
Yeah, they are.
You would probably be able to get away with that. Maybe switch one of the bodies to have some mail, like the torso to have some mail or something, but kind of depending on when we see what those kits are actually going to look like. It's difficult to say, but that's one option. And then Gripping Beast also has a number of like your generic Dark Age. I think like Goth nobles or even the Roman nobles. And then you just switch out the helmets with the Anglo-Dane or Anglo-Saxon helmets. And then you've got perfectly serviceable Warlord and Hearthguard that you can put on the table. Lots of options there. I mean, for metals, there's just every single manufacturer. I mean, it goes from Foundry to Gripping Beast to Footsore, and then I've probably missed out 20 other ones. But there's absolutely no problem getting lots of figures. I mean, one thing I am going to mention is the Warlord Games bought up. I think they were called Saxon Miniatures. I'm generally not a fan of Warlord, but this was actually a line that they bought. And this looks really amazing. Also, they also have like legendary Warlord pack. So they have like Red Bad and like some other kings of Wessex, Sussex, and Mercia and stuff like that. So it's just a really cool pack if you want to paint up some really nice looking kind of like character models and then never use them for anything. But still, you'll have some really nice models.
It sounds like basically anybody can kind of do what they want and get their Anglo-Saxons on the board. So the only reason we're not seeing them is definitely that their maybe more optimized playstyle needs like a million miniatures.
yeah, definitely. But I think they always tend to do quite well in any tournaments. Like it's not like it's
yeah,
like
they won the
one.
The Polish.
Oh yeah, of course. I think the Polish Grand Melee in 2022 was won by Anglo-Saxons using 4 points of Levy, Gael Gadil, and Pilgrims.
The Wonks,
That was a nasty combination. But even if you're just limited to one unit of mercenaries, I think you can make it work really nicely. And then generally, they kind of tend to... they're just solid. Like, it's really difficult to beat them. So you're never going to crush them completely because there's so many of them. So they just kind of like stick around middle tables, or they can like if you have a very capable or a capable general, they can definitely like kind of hold their own, so they're
for sure
not holding you back, and they're just like really nice and themey.
Yes. All right. So I think that finishes up the episode, right? I think there is we have done all our little segments. We haven't done the rating. So what would you rate them out of 5?
Out of five Saxon mustaches, I would I rate them 4. I think if your only opponent only plays Anglo-Saxons, you're going to get sick of them pretty damn quickly playing against them. but they do one thing really well, and they do it I mean, they just kind of control the board, lots of bodies, don't die, and generally frustrate your enemy.
That sounds
good. How about
you? That sounds great fun for both.
What do you think about them?
Yeah, I think I'll give them like 3.5. I think their activation being move only without the fatigue, holds them back way more than it should, because if that was a charge, they would be a menace, I think.
I'm pretty sure at some point during playtesting, they were like, you know what, we need to tone this one down a little bit.
And other factions have that charge, that fatigue-free charge, and that it's just, I always use it, it's always good. And so I'll give them 3.5 because I think they're powerful, but you also kind of have to play the game well to play these guys well, because they're still on foot. And you still only move 2 units that quickly, and you have like 6 of these units which need to be at a good, in a good position next turn. And so I'll give them 3.5, and I'll also maybe subtract 0.5 to, because you need to paint so many bodies if you want to do it correctly, in my opinion. And so yeah, I think on the hobby side, painting 70 levies is probably not super fun for most. I think that would absolutely kill your hobby deuce. But yeah, the once they're on the table, and you kind of, they're also great if you just keep on painting some levies here and there over like a few months and just kind of collect them for different factions, and then you end up with a mix of levies that are totally all, they're all on the same basis, but they're kind of look different, but that's perfect. Like, it's perfect, it's exactly what they were. And so overall rating, it's like 3.5. I think they're good, but they're also, they definitely have some drawbacks.
Yep. All right. Okay. So that's the first Age of Vikings faction wrapped up.
Yeah.
Following the book order here, because then we'll be doing the Welsh next.
Yeah. Cool. We'll see if there's with the FAQs, we might speculate a little bit to see which factions we think might get an FAQ and maybe skip them. I think that would make sense. So that could be the Welsh. But we'll just have a talk, and you'll see whichever faction is next. You will see, and just let us know how you like it.
Yeah, maybe an administrative note. I think we have a few episode ideas lined up. Both Tim and I are super busy at the moment with work things, so we're trying to get them on time. But even when we have a 5-week buffer between episodes, doesn't always work out with some last minute change.
It is what it is.
I think on the kind of on the table is that we want to talk about some of the FAQ changes. At the moment, only Age of Hannibal and Alexander are out, but the other ones are going to drop imminently. We haven't actually talked about the FAQ changes to the rules for the 2022 update. So we're going to see if we can kind of put it in there, but they've been out for a while, so I'm not sure if we want to spend super amount of time on it. We have your tournament where you ran a 2-day tournament with quite a few people in Osnabrück.
Yeah.
And then finally, we also want to get on Mirko from the German Grand Melee and also of now the World Cup organization.
Yeah, the World Cup. Yeah, I'm super excited to talk about all of these things, actually. My tournament was super fun, and I would have died without my girlfriend helping like 3 days straight. But yeah, talking about the other stuff, the Grand Melee with legendary warlords or units, that's going to be insane. And also, yeah, the international thing. I think to all the international people out there, it's, if you want to make the trip, just hit me up on Discord, and I can definitely help you kind of figure it out. The whole idea of the World Championship is that people from the whole world come here, and it worked before, so why shouldn't it work this time? And we can definitely help you out.
Yeah, definitely. Also, Munster, where it's being organized, is not particularly far away from kind of like major hub airports like Amsterdam or
Dortmund, Düsseldorf.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that is a major international hub airport.
Düsseldorf is, sure. Yes. Sure. Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Keep telling yourself that.
Screw you. Düsseldorf is huge. Like, it's huge. Screw you,
all
man.
Right, all right, sure. Yeah. But it's relatively easy to get to. And loads of people are going to be traveling from all over Europe there. So I'm pretty sure you can get a ride from someone if you throw it out there. But anyway, lots of things. It. It's going to be exciting. 2023 is going to be a good year for gaming.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's also Warhammer Next Edition, but yeah. And I'm also painting my Numidians up right now to kind of get on the hype train for the Numidian FAQ, but more on that next time, I guess.
Yeah, I guess the Numidians are now OP. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing them.
Sure.
That's the way it goes. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Speak to you guys soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.